Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Becky. I am the host of the book club. For those of you who have been tuning in of late, you know by now that my intro and theme for the Becky Book Familiar Book Club Talk Live Radio Show is Jeremiah 29:11. And it says, "For I know the thoughts that I think towards you, says the Lord, thoughts of peace and not of evil, to give you a future and a hope." Now, Becky Book Familiar Book Club is doing something very different this year. We will be on daily at various times as we accommodate our guests who will be starting their personal appearance on Book Club in the very near future. And tonight I have an episode of Faking It by Cora Carmack. Now this book, Faking It, has it all. Sexual tension, heartache, and tabulous characters all wrapped up in a healthy dose of Cora Carmack humor. And now, Faking It. The first chapter, and probably the only chapter that I will be sharing with you from this great book, Faking It, is entitled CAD. And generally, we refer to CAD as someone who is a little bit on the obnoxious side. And get right into the story to see if that is the case with this guy. You would think I'd be used to it by now. It wouldn't feel like a rusty egg beater to the heart every time I saw them together. You would think I would stop subjecting myself to the torture of seeing the girl I loved with another guy. You would be wrong on all counts. A nor'easter had just blown through, so the Philadelphia air was crisp. Day-old snow still crunching beneath my boots. The sound seemed unusually loud, like I walked toward the gallows instead of coffee with friends. Friends. I gave one of those funny, it's not actually funny laughs, and my breath came out like smoke. I could see them standing on the corner up ahead. Bliss's arms were around Garrick's neck, and the two of them stood wrapped together on the sidewalk. I hated those pictures. I tried not to be jealous. I was getting over it. I was. I wanted Bliss to be happy, and as she slipped her hands in Garrick's coat pocket and their breath fogged between them, she definitely looked happy, but that was part of the problem. Even if I managed to let go of my feelings for it, it was that happiness that inspired my jealousy, because I was fucking miserable. I tried to keep myself busy, make some friends, and settle into life all right here, but it just wasn't the same. Starting over sucked. On a scale of 1 to ghetto, my apartment was a solid 8. Things were still awkward with my best friend. I had student loans piling so high, I might aspirate beneath them at any time. I thought about pursuing my master's degree, and I thought that would get at least one part of my life right. Wrong. I was the youngest one in the program, and everyone else had years of working in the real world under his or her belt. They all had their lives together, and my life was about as clean and well-kept as the community bathrooms had been in my freshman dorm. I'd been here nearly 3 months, and the only acting I'd done had been a cameo as a homeless person in a Good Samaritan commercial. Yeah, I was living a good life. I knew the minute Bliss caught sight of me because she pulled her hand out of Garrett's pocket and placed them safely at her side. She stepped out of his arms and called, "Cat!" I smiled. Maybe I was doing some acting after all. I met them on the sidewalk, and Bliss gave me a hug, short, obligatory. Garrett shook my hand. As much as it irked me, I still really liked the guy. He never tried to keep Bliss from seeing me, and he'd apparently given me a pretty stellar reference when I applied to Temple. He didn't go around marking his territory or telling me to back off. He shook my hand and smiled and sounded genuine when he said, "It's good to see you, Cat. It's good to see you guys, too." There was a moment of awkward silence, and then Bliss gave an exaggerated shiver. "I don't know about you guys, but I am freezing. Let's head inside." Together, we filed through the door. Mugshot was a coffee spot during the day and served alcohol at night. I had not been there yet, as it was kind of a long trek to my apartment up by the Temple campus, and because I didn't drink coffee, but I'd heard good things. Bliss loved coffee, and I still love making Bliss happy, so I agreed to meet there when she called. I thought of asking if they'd serve me alcohol now, even though it was morning. Instead, I settled on a smoothie and found us a table big enough that we'd have plenty of personal space. Bliss sat first while Garrett waited for their drinks. Her cheeks were pink from the cold, but the winter weather agreed with her. The blue scarf knotted around her neck brought out her eyes, and her curls were scattered across her shoulders, windswept and wonderful. "Damn it, I had to stop doing this." She pulled off her gloves and rubbed her hands together. "How are you?" she asked. I balled my fist under the table and lied. "I'm great. Classes are good. I'm loving Temple. And the city is great. I'm great." "You are?" I could tell by the look on her face that she knew I was lying. She was my best friend, which made her pretty hard to fool. She'd always been good at reading me, except for when it came to how I felt about her. She could pick up on just about all my other fears and insecurities, but never that. Sometimes I wondered if it was wishful thinking. Maybe she never picked up on my feelings because she hadn't wanted to. "I am," I assured her. She still didn't believe me, but she knew me well enough to know that I needed to hold on to my lie. I couldn't vent to her about my problems, not right now. We didn't have that kind of relationship anymore. Garrett sat down. He brought all three of our drinks. I didn't even hear them call out my order. "Thanks," I said. "No problem. What are we talking about?" "Here we go again." I took a long, long slurp of my smoothie so that I didn't have to answer immediately. Bliss said, "Cat just finished telling me all about his classes. He's kicking higher education's ass. At least some things hadn't changed." She still knew me well enough to know when I needed an out. Garrett nudged Bliss's drink toward her and smiled when she took a long, grateful drink. He turned to me and said, "That's good to hear, Cat. I'm glad it's going well. I'm still on good terms with the professor at Temple, so if you ever need anything, you know you just have to ask God." Why couldn't he have been an asshole? If he were one, good punch would have gone a long way to easing the tightness in my chest. And it would be much cheaper than punching out a wall in my apartment. I said, "Thanks. I'll keep that in mind." We chatted about unimportant things. Bliss talked about their production of Pride and Prejudice, and I realized that Garrett really had been good for her. I never would have guessed that out of all of us, she'd be the one out doing theater professionally so quickly after we graduated. It's not that she wasn't talented, but she was never confident. I thought she would have gone a safer route and been a stage manager. I like to think I could have brought that out of her too, but I wasn't so sure. She talked about their apartment on the edge of the neighborhood. So far, I'd managed to wriggle out of all her invitations to visit, but sooner or later, I was going to run out of excuses and would have to see the place they lived in together. Apparently, their neighborhood was a pretty big party area. They lived right across from a very popular bar. Garrick said, Bliss is such a light sleeper that it has become a regular event to wake up and listen to the drama that inevitably occurs outside our window at closing time. She was a light sleeper. I hated that he knew that and I didn't. I hated feeling this way. They started relaying a story of one of those nighttime events, but they were barely looking at me. They stared at each other, laughing, reliving the memory. I was a spectator to their perfect harmony, and it was a show I was tired of watching. I made a promise to myself then that I wouldn't do this again, not until I had figured all my shit out. This had to be the last time. I smiled and nodded through the rest of the story and was relieved when Bliss's phone rang. She looked at the screen and didn't even explain before she accepted the call and pressed the button, the phone to her ear. Kelsey, oh my God, I haven't heard from you in weeks. Kelsey had done exactly what she said she would. At the end of the summer, everyone was moving to new cities or new universities, and Kelsey went overseas for the trip of a lifetime. Every time I looked at Facebook, she had added a new country to her list. Bliss held up a finger and mouth. Be right back, she stood and said into the phone. Kelsey, hold on 1 second. I can barely hear you. I'm going to go outside. I watched her go, remembering when her face used to light up like that talking to me. It was depressing the way life branched off in a different direction. Trees only grew up and out. There was no going back to the roots, to the way things had been. I spent 4 years with my college friends, and they felt like family. But now we were scattered across the country and would probably never all be together again. Garrett said, Kat, there's something I'd like to talk to you about while Bliss is gone. This was going to suck. I could tell. Last time we had a chat alone, he told me that I had to get over Bliss, that I couldn't live my life based on my feelings for her. Damn, if he wasn't still right. I'm all ears, I said. I don't really know the best way to say. Just say it. That was the worst part of all of this. I've gotten my heart broken by my best friend, and now everyone tiptoed around me like I was on the verge of meltdown, like a girl with PMS. Apparently having emotions equated to having a vagina. Garrett took a deep breath. He looked unsure. But in the moment before he spoke, a smile pulled at his face like he just couldn't help himself. I'm proposing to Bliss, he said. The world went silent, and I heard the tick, tick of the clock on the wall beside me. It sounded like the ticking of a bomb, which was ironic, considering all the pieces of me that I had been holding together by sheer force of will had just been blown to bits. I schooled my features as best I could, even though I felt like I might suffocate at any moment. I took a beat, which is just a fancy acting word for a pause. But it felt easier if I approached this like a scene. Like fiction, beats are reserved for those moments when something in the scene or your character shifts. They are moments of change. Man, was this one hell of a beat. Cat, before Garrett could say something nice or consoling, I pushed myself back into action. I smiled and made a face that I hoped looked congratulatory. That great man, she couldn't have found a better guy. It really was just like acting, bad acting anyway, like when the words didn't feel natural in your mouth and my mind stayed separated from what I was saying no matter how hard I tried to stay in character. My thoughts raced ahead, trying to judge whether or not my audience was buying my performance, whether Garrett was buying it. So, you're okay with this? It was imperative that I didn't allow myself to pause before I answered. Of course. Bliss is my best friend, and I've never seen her so happy, which means I couldn't be happier for her. The past is the past. He reached across the table and patted me on the shoulder like I was his son, a little brother, or his dog. You're a good man, Cat. That was me, the perpetual good guy, which meant I perpetually came in second. My smoothie tasted bitter on my tongue. You had auditions last week, right? Garrett asked. How did they turn out? Oh, please, no. I just had to hear about his proposal plan. If I had to follow that up by relaying my complete and utter failure as a grad student, I'd impale myself on a stirring straw. Luckily, I was saved by Bliss's return and had a wide smile on her face. She stood behind Garrett's chair and placed a hand on his shoulder. I was struck suddenly by the thought that she was going to say yes. Somewhere deep in my gut, I could feel the certainty of it, and it killed me. Beat, beat, beat. I should say something, anything, but I was stalled because this wasn't fiction. This wasn't a ground when it happened or after it happened. I needed a break from them, from Bliss, from being a secondary character in their story. Actually, I forgot to tell you, I'm going to go home for Thanksgiving after all. I hated lying to her, but I just couldn't do it anymore. Graham hasn't been feeling well, so I thought it was a good idea to go. Her face pulled into an expression of concern, and her hand reached out toward my arm. I pretended like I didn't see it and stepped away to throw my empty smoothie cup in the trash. Is she okay, Bliss asked? Oh, yeah, I think so. Just a bug, probably. But at her age, you never know. I just used my 70-year-old grandma, the woman who raised me, as an excuse. Talk about a douche move. Oh, well, tell her I said hi and that I hope she feels better. And you have a safe flight. Bliss leaned in to hug me, and I didn't move away. In fact, I hugged her back because I didn't plan on seeing her again for a while, not until I could say without lying that I was over her. And based on the way my whole body seemed to seem at her touch, it might take a while. The two of them packed up to leave, and I sat back down, saying I was going to stay and work on homework for a while. I pulled out a play to read, but in reality, I just wasn't ready for the walk home. I couldn't spend any more alone time locked in my thoughts. The coffee shop was just busy enough that my mind was filled with the buzzing of other people's lives and conversation. Bliss moved through the glass as they left, waved through the glass as they left, and I waved back, wondering if she could feel the finality of this goodbye. Now, in chapter one of Faking It, we are in the midst of Kat and Garrett and Bliss, who are good friends. And from my take on this first chapter, Kat and Bliss used to be an item at one time. And for whatever reason, they are no longer. And so now, Garrett and Bliss are really progressing in their relationship, and he is on the verge of asking her to marry him. And Kat, on the other hand, cannot stomach the possibilities of this whole experience, Max. Mitch's hand slid into my back pocket. At the same time, the phone in my front pocket buzzed. I let him have the 3 seconds it took for me to grab my phone. Then I elbowed him, and he removed his hand. I'd had to elbow him 3 times on the way to the coffee shop. He was like that cartoon fish with memory problems. I looked at the screen, and it showed me a picture of my mom that I snapped while she wasn't looking. She had been chopping vegetables and looked like a knife-wielding maniac, which she pretty much was all the time, minus the knife. I jogged the last few steps to mugshot and slipped inside before answering. Hello, Mom. This was Christmas music. There was Christmas music on in the background. We hadn't even gotten Thanksgiving over with, and she was playing Christmas music. Maniac. Hi, sweetie. She stretched out the end of sweetie so long, I thought she was a robot who had just malfunctioned. Then finally she continued, what are you up to? Nothing, Mom. I just popped into Mugshots for a coffee. You remember it was that place I took you when you and Dad helped move here. I do remember. It was a cute place. Pity they served alcohol. And that was my mom in a nutshell. Maze chose that moment, an unfortunately silent moment, to say, Max, babe, you want your usual? I waved him off and stepped a few feet away. Mom must have had me on speakerphone because my dad cut in. And who is that, Mackenzie? Mackenzie, I shuddered. I hated my parents' absolute refusal to call me Max. And if they didn't approve of Max for their baby girl, they sure wouldn't like that I was dating a guy named Mace. My dad would have an aneurysm. Just a guy, I said. Mace nudged me and rubbed his thumb and fingers together. That's right. He's been fired from his job. I handed him my purse to pay. Is this a guy you're dating, Mom asked. I sighed. There wasn't any harm in giving her this as long as I fudged some of the details. Or you know all of them. Yes, Mom. We've been dating for a few weeks. Three months. But whatever. Is that so? How come we don't know anything about this guy being Dad? Dad again. Because it's still new. But he's a really nice guy. Smart. I don't think Mace actually finished high school, but he was gorgeous and a killer drum player. I wasn't cut out for the type of guy my mother wanted for me. My brain would melt from boredom in a week. That was if I didn't send him running before that. Where did you meet, Mom asked. Oh, you know, he hit on me at the go-go bar where I danced, that extra job that you have no idea I worked. Instead, I said, the library. Mace at the library, that was laughable. The tattoo curving across his collarbone would have been spelled villain instead of villain if I hadn't been there to stop him. Really, Mom sounded skeptical. I didn't blame her. Meeting nice guys at the library wasn't really my thing. Every meet-the-parent thing I'd ever gone through had ended disastrously with my parents certain their daughter had been brainwashed by a godless individual and my boyfriend kicking me to the curb because I had too much baggage. My baggage was named Betty and Nick and came wearing polka dots and sweater vests on the way home from bridge clubs. Sometimes it was hard to believe that I came from them. The first time I dyed my hair bright pink, my mom burst into tears like I told her I was 16 and pregnant. And that was only temporary dye. It was easier these days just to humor them, especially since they were still helping me out financially so I could spend more time working on my music. And it wasn't that I didn't love them. I did. I just didn't love the person they wanted me to be. So I made small sacrifices. I didn't introduce them to my boyfriends. I dyed my hair a relatively normal color before any trip home. I took out or covered my P piercings and wore long sleeves, high neck shirts to cover my tattoos. I told them I worked the front desk at an accounting firm instead of a tattoo parlor and never mentioned my other job working in a bar. When I went home, I played at Normal for a few days and then got the hell out of Dodge before my parents could try to set me up with a crusty accountant. Yes, Mom, the library. When I went home for Christmas, I just tell her it didn't work out with the library boy or that he was a serial killer. Use that as my excuse to never date nice guys. Well, that sounds lovely. We'd love to meet him. Mace returned to me then with my purse and our coffee. He snuck a flash out of his pocket and added a little something special to his drink. I waved him off when he offered it to me. The caffeine was enough. Funny how he couldn't afford coffee, but he could afford alcohol. Sure, Mom. Mace snuck a hand into my coat and wrapped it around my waist. His hands was large and warm, and his touch through my thin teeth made me shiver. I think he would actually really like him. I finished the sentence on a breathy sigh as Mace's lips found the skin of my neck, and my eyes rolled back in bliss. I never met an accountant who could do that. He's very talented. I guess we'll see for ourselves soon. Dad replied was gruffy. If they thought there was any chance I was bringing a guy home for Christmas, they were delusional. Sure, Dad, Mason's lips were making a pretty great case for skipping this morning band practice, but it was our last time to practice all together before our gig next week. Great, we'll be at that coffee place in about 5 minutes. My coffee hit the floor before I even got a chance to taste it. You what? You're not at home in Oklahoma? Mace jumped back when the coffee splattered all over our feet. Jesus, Max. I didn't have time to worry about him. I had much bigger issues. Don't be mad, honey, Mom said. We were so sad when you said you couldn't come home for Thanksgiving. Then Michael and Bethany decided to visit her family for the holidays, too. So we decided to come visit you. I even special ordered a turkey. Oh, you should invite your new boyfriend, the one from the library. Shit, all of this shit. Sorry, Mom, but I'm pretty sure my boyfriend is busy on Thanksgiving. They said, no, I'm not. And I don't know if it was all the years of being in a band and the loud music damaging his ears or 2 minute lost brain cells, but the guy could just not master a freaking whisper. Oh, great. We'll be there in a few minutes, sweetie. Love you, Boo Boo Bear. If he called me Boo Boo Bear in front of Mace, my brain would liquefy from mortification. Wait, Mom. The line went dead. I kind of wanted to follow its lead. Think fast, Max. Parentals and T minus. 2 minutes. Time for damage control. Mace had maneuvered us around the spilled coffee while I was talking, and he was moving to put his arm back around my waist. I pushed him back. I took a good look at him. His black, shaggy hair, gorgeous dark eyes, the gauges that sketched his earlobes and the stretched his earlobes, and the mechanical skull tattoo on the side of his neck. I loved the way he wore his personality on his skin. My parents would hate it. My parents hated anything that couldn't be organized and labeled and pinned safely into a cage. My worst nightmare. My parents hated anything that couldn't be organized and labeled and pinned safely into a cage. They weren't always that way. They used to listen and judge people on the things that mattered, but that time was long gone, and they'd be here any minute. You have to leave, I said. What? He hooked his fingers into my belt loop and tugged me forward until our hips met. We just got here. A small part of me thought maybe Mace could handle my parents. He charmed me, and for most people that was akin to charming a python. He may not have been smart or put together or any of those things, but he was passionate about music and about life, and he was passionate about me. There was fire between us, fire I didn't want extinguished because my parents were still living in the past and couldn't get over how things had happened with Alex. I'm sorry, babe. My parents have made an impromptu visit, and they're going to be here any minute. So I need you to leave or pretend like you don't know me or something. I was going to apologize, say that I wasn't ashamed of him, that I just wasn't ready for that. I didn't get a chance before he held his hand up and backed away. Fuck. No argument here. I'm out. He turned for the door. Call me when you lose the folks. Then he bailed. No questions asked. No valiant offer to brave meeting the parents. He walked out the door, lit up a cigarette, and took off. For a second, I thought about following him, whether to flee or kick his ass. I wasn't sure, but I couldn't. Now, I just had to figure out what to tell my parents about my suddenly absent library-going nice guy boyfriend. I just have to tell them he had to work or go to class or heal the sick or something. I scanned the room for an open table. They probably see right through the lie and know there was no nice guy. But there was no way around it. Well, there you have it. Another episode of Becky Book Amelia Book Club. Now, Becky Book Amelia Book Club will air right here on Becky Book Amelia Book Club Talk Live Radio Show every day at 11 o'clock until further notice. And the call-in number is 347-205-9535. Check out the show and be well informed, entertained, inspired, and enlightened. As you know, my motto for this season of Becky Book Amelia Book Club is, "For I know the plan that I have for you, saith the Lord. They are plans for the good and not for disaster, to give you a future and a hope." Well, that's it for now. I hope you enjoyed Faking It. We'll continue right here tomorrow, same time, same station. Be blessed, and good night.